Hello, Gallatin Valley. You're listening to KGVM FM 95.9 in Bozeman. I'm Siobhan O'Steele, and this is Body Politic. So we're back with Rossi, who joined us in the first half talking about Bill 458. We'll probably talk about a few other things. So you mentioned how the agents that are pushing this slate of hate are doing so probably because they have a favorable governor right now. And I know that, that makes sense. I know that when I express to other people who are up at the Capitol how I feel about, the fact that this stuff might just actually get signed by the governor, I always get these reassurances that, oh, well, these things are unconstitutional. They're not going to pass muster. They're going to be challenged in court and we're going to win. And part of me thinks, well, that might be true, but they still have the United States Supreme Court. And that might be another reason why they're out there, pushing these things so hard right now. And I was just wondering if you could tell me a little bit about that progression. What might happen? Should these things become law and we challenge them?
Sure. I mean, I think just like this is similar to the discussion about SB 458 itself. There's like, what actually might happen? And then there's like the bigger picture of like the overarching goals of the bill and the pushing of anti-trans policy into the court system, right? So I think in terms of like practical implications, if these bills go through, and each bill is different in its own way, but so if we're talking about 458 specifically or SB 99 or whatever it is, bill goes through, governor decides either to sign it or he can also just decide to not sign it and it becomes law, which is just as good as signing it. Or he can veto, right? Those are his options. So if he either signs it or he doesn't sign it and just lets it become law on its own, it will be challenged in the courts. And the people who litigate these issues have two options. They can file in state court, eventually making it to the Montana Supreme Court, or they can file in federal court. And you're right that the U.S. Supreme Court is a more conservative court than it used to be. And the current makeup of the court is such that they're not going to have an easy time there. I mean, the people on the U.S. Supreme Court right now, who most recently found that discrimination based on transgender status is sex discrimination under the U.S. Constitution, most of those people are still there. And the majority of that court, the U.S. Supreme Court, is still people who found that transgender discrimination is sex discrimination. So they can fight in federal court all they want, but as the U.S. Supreme Court stands right now, their argument is the losing argument. Our argument is the winning argument, which is that when you discriminate against a trans person, it's sex discrimination. The U.S. Supreme Court agrees with us on that. And then when you look at the state level, you get to the Montana Supreme Court, and we have had, Eleanor Maloney's case out of Billings, which I think was a Human Rights Bureau decision. I can't remember, but we've had basically three cases in the last five-ish years where different Montana courts have found that discrimination based on transgender status is sex discrimination and or a violation of privacy rights. So like, there isn't a court, a high court at this juncture that I think they can depend on to find that these laws actually pass constitutional muster. And in Montana, the issue is that the far right is using these bills, once they get to the court system, to say that Montana courts and Montana judges are somehow biased. When the reality is they're just sending a lot of unconstitutional stuff to the judges and the courts, and the courts are finding in favor of the Constitution and our constitutional rights. But the more of this stuff they send, the more they can beat this drum that somehow the courts are biased when they're not. They're just applying the Constitution as it is meant to be applied, which is to protect the rights of Montana citizens and not narrow those rights via legislative action. And that is not just about trans people. That is our right to privacy. That is our right to dignity. That is our right to a clean and healthful environment. You know, Montanans love our Constitution. We love it. It polls very well. The Constitution is more popular than any politician in the history of Montana. And they don't want to see it changed. And they love what makes it unique. They love the right to privacy. They love the right to a clean and healthful environment. They love that it protects our ability to go hike and fish and be outdoors without having to worry about pollutants. They love that it allows us to live our lives and make decisions with our families and our doctors without the invasion of the government. They love that stuff. And until they can get a court that decides, you know, those things aren't worthy, they're kind of out of luck, and it makes them very upset. So yeah. What they're trying to do is paint the courts with this broad brush about them being biased when it's just not true. It's just the courts applying the Constitution the way it was meant to be applied, which is how the people who wrote it wanted it to be applied. So any route they go, they can go state route, they can go federal route in terms of the courts. The highest courts don't agree with them right now at the state or federal level about whether or not transgender discrimination is discrimination based on sex. It is, because that's how the Constitution applies.
Yeah, it seems like the Montana Constitution is the opposite of everything that Governor Gianforte stands for.
No comment.
And I've heard a lot of people, you know, that know a lot about the Montana Constitution say that it's probably one of the most progressive state constitutions in the United States.
I don't even think I'd call it progressive. I think it's just a constitution that more vehemently protects the individual rights and freedoms of people, and actually protects the health and well-being of Montanans.
Yeah, which and both sides should love, right?
Which both sides should love, exactly right. And yeah. I think that's the thing about bills like 458 and this other stuff is like, these are invasions of the family sphere. They're invasions of our right to privacy, not in terms of just our homes and our families and our, you know, our personal lives, but also in terms of our medical care. I mean, this is just the tip of the iceberg, really. Like,
yeah.
They're taking this most vulnerable population, this easiest population to pick on, because most people don't understand this. And they're, you know, trying to make sure that we can't make our own decisions, or we can't live the way we need to protect ourselves and our families. But then what's next? Like, is any medical decision that people make that this particular group of politicians doesn't agree with going to be taken out of your hands? I mean, that's what people should be worried about. I mean, if you're not a trans or non-binary person, or you don't know a trans or non-binary person, so you don't think that this is that big of a deal, you better think about the medical care you're getting right now and whether or not someone could disagree with it in the future and take it away from you, you know, because
yeah.
that's what our right to privacy is protecting us from. And if you're not worried about this, you should be, because your medical care might be next.
Yeah. You know, it seems like 458 and even Senate Bill 99, other bills like that, that have been coming up again and again, really seem out of character to me for Montana, at least the Montana that I grew up in. That used to be a real live and let live mentality. And I often wonder if that has somehow disappeared or changed, or the fact that the legislature is just that out of step with the people of Montana.
You know, I think that's, I think it's a good question. I mean, I think that there's a lot of factors that go into it, right? Like, I think when you're talking about privacy and autonomy, in terms of your decision making around your own medical care and the medical care of your family, I think that's a conversation and a message that resonates with almost everybody. I mean, I can't think of a single person who wouldn't say, I would prefer that the government stay out of my medical care.
Right.
Most people want the government to stay out of their medical care. Those decisions should be between families and doctors. And, you know, I think that the opportunity exists to strip people of their rights when it's a community that most people don't understand. And
right.
Unfortunately, most people don't understand the trans and non-binary community because they haven't made the effort to, or they don't know anybody in that community. You know, I think it's a combination of just not under, and it opens a window, right? Like when that there's a massive gap in understanding between the general public and a particular community, it opens a window for that community to be attacked because if people don't understand them, then they don't know how to defend them or don't feel like they have to. And so I don't know. I think there's a lot of factors that go into kind of the environment that has to be created in order for this stuff to go through the legislature. And kind of misunderstanding and lack of knowledge is a big one of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I this week when I was talking to you about doing the show, you mentioned that you had some lobbying to do and you've been involved with the hearings this week. Can you kind of tell us how that went? Maybe you can tell us a little bit about things that are being said at these hearings and basically what is the general mood of LGBT advocates at the Capitol right now.
I'd be lying if I said that the hearings were fine. The hearings are really hard. First of all, when it's a bad bill, you know, you have to sit through however many people supporting that bill, lying about the transgender community, disseminating false information about who we are and the medical care that we need and, you know, what our lives are like. There's a lot of gross kind of accusations and insinuations made about our community that you have to sit through. And I won't go into those because I'm not interested in giving them credence on your show, but it can be very hard. And so you have to sit and listen through that. And then, you know, the opponents, our community, our friends, our allies, our supporters can then get up and we get to say our piece and we get to talk through the parts of the bill that are being misunderstood or kind of disagree with the misinformation that has been delivered to the committee. And it's a lot to take, and it's very, very draining for people, not only that are there every day, but people participating even just in that hearing to have to sit through. It's exhausting. So it's not an easy space to be in. The advocates that are there day in and day out are both members of the trans non-binary community and people who are not, but who are working on these bills are just the most hardworking, compassionate, honest, brave people that you will ever meet. And they none of them give up, and none of us are giving it. So it's exhausting, but it's also a little bit fortifying because we've all made a decision to be there. We've all made a decision to fight, and we're all doing it together. And it creates a very important community in that space that I think benefits the legislature as a whole. And you know, one of the things I was talking about in a House Judiciary hearing, I can't remember what bill it was on, was basically just like we don't want to be there. So I shouldn't speak for everybody. What I said is, I don't want to be here talking about this stuff. I don't want to come up here every day and come into these hearings and defend my humanity to you. I don't want to talk about my life with you. I don't want to talk about my gender identity with you. I don't want to talk about this stuff. I think for me, and I think for most advocates, what we'd rather be talking about are the things that are actually important to Montana's health and well-being as a whole, as a state. We want to be talking about access to healthcare, affordable healthcare. We want to be talking about housing and affordable housing for our workforce. We want to talk about how no one can afford to live in their communities anymore, and the government needs to do something to provide affordable housing to Montanans who live and work here. We want to talk about things that are actually important to Montanans that we hear about all the time and talk about amongst our family and friends. And instead, you bill sponsors of SB 99, of SB 458, of HB 359, of HB 361, of all these anti, you're forcing us to come up here. You are waging the culture wars. It's not us. We aren't asking to be here. We are not asking to come here every day and defend who we are as people and ask you to leave us alone. All we want to do is be left alone. So we can talk about housing, we can talk about healthcare, we can talk about tax reform, we can have all these conversations that are actually important to all of Montana. But you are waging the culture war. forcing us to come here every day, filing these awful bills, and forcing this conversation upon us. We don't ask for this. You make us be here. You make us come to the podium and talk about this. And I think, at least for me, that's the most frustrating. That's the most frustrating part. Like, I'm a non-binary person. It's a part of my identity. And I don't want to talk about it every day. I want to talk about things that are actually important to Montanans, the things that voters are actually talking to their legislators about when they're, you know, knocking on their doors. It's not trans and non-binary healthcare. It's, I can't afford my own healthcare. I can't afford my rent. I'm getting evicted because my rent just went up $800 a month. You know, like, I would like more access to fresh produce. Like, it's hard for me to afford food. I mean, these are the things that people are talking to their legislators about. It's not trans and non-binary healthcare. So they pitch it as if we've like come to the legislature, like we're coming to the legislature and demanding all these rights from them and demanding all these, like, this treatment. And we haven't said a freaking word about any of it. And then they file all these bills that force us into the building to talk about trans and non-binary issues when all we would prefer to do is talk about issues that are actually important to Montana. And it's incredibly frustrating because it wastes so much time for not only for advocates in the building, but also for the legislators themselves.
Yeah, it seems so much like a pay no attention to the man behind the curtain move on their part,
right.
You know?
Right.
They just, I think that anybody that is focusing on the culture war basically is doing it because they have nothing else to offer. And they're certainly not serious about governing or making a difference for the constituents that they are supposedly working for.
Exactly right. And we're not, and they blame the culture war on us.
Yeah.
When we're not the ones waging it.
Yeah.
We have just said, you know, can we just have a truce and we can all go, can we have a truce and we can all go talk about affordable housing? And they're like,
yeah.
No. We're gonna talk about this instead. It's not us asking to talk about it; it's them. I mean, that's the funny thing about these like far right Republicans who filed these bills is like, you know, they call us snowflakes and they call us, you know, overly sensitive and whatever. And all they're doing is legislating away their own personal discomfort. Like, they're using the legislative process to make themselves feel more comfortable. And it's like, that's the epitome. That's the epitome of being a snowflake.
Well, and they do it in such a gross way. I mean, when I've been up there at hearings and, you know, when the proponents of these bills come out and they say the things that they're saying, I mean, part of me just wants to jump up and scream, you know, that is defamation. You know, you're talking about me. And, you know, geez, just please stop. You don't even know me. And yet they're saying these things with such conviction. And they're putting our lives in danger just with the things they say. It's not the bills necessarily or the laws. It's the toxic rhetoric that they come up with to get these things taken seriously, you know, which is all based on untruths and defamation. I wish that it was actionable. I mean, I wish that we could just have a class action lawsuit and say, you know, you've impacted my well-being, my safety in public, my ability to get a job, just by the crap you're saying. You know,
I'm not a civil litigator, but I don't know if that's actionable. It might be. I have no idea. It's
because
something.
They have to know that they're lying. They have to know. I don't know how they can.
I think some of them do. I think some of them truly believe that they're not. You know, like I honestly believe that some of them, their ideology is so set that I think they actually believe. I think. I mean, I don't. But you know, that's hard because I think some of them are being dishonest, and some of them are not, and they truly believe the things they're saying about the trans non-binary community are true, regardless of whether or not we think they are, regardless of whether or not they're based in fact. Ideology is powerful, you know, and it.
Yeah. So speaking of that, you know, when you're up there and you're interacting with these people, you're lobbying, you probably get a chance to actually speak face to face with some of these people. I have not. Have you ever seen anybody actually moved? I mean, to recognize their humanity? Do you think minds are ever changed? Does empathy ever break through in any of these people? Because it doesn't feel that way when I'm up there.
I mean, I think it depends on who you're talking to, you know. And like I was saying earlier, we have allies on both sides of the aisle on this issue. I mean, the Democrats generally are 100% allied all the time, right? Like, we can trust the Democrats to vote against these bills every time. And they're just as frustrated as we are in terms of wanting to address the issues that are actually important to Montanans and not have to spend all their time trying to beat back these discriminatory bills. They want to talk about housing, they want to talk about healthcare, they want to talk about the tax code, you know. So it's just as frustrating for them that they have to spend a ton of time talking about this stuff in our defense, because that's what they're doing. They're defending us. And then on the Republican side of the aisle, there are definitely people who either came into the session with their hearts and minds in the right place when it came to trans and non-binary issues, or have gotten there as we move forward. And yes, I have seen that happen. And yes, it is possible. And the more you talk to people, and the more they get to know you, and the more they get to understand about us and our community, the more likely their minds are to change. And I've definitely seen that happen on multiple occasions. And that's why we can't give up. That's why we can't give up, because it does happen. And the more people, the more understanding that is created, the more likely those minds are to change. And like I said, we've come really close on some of these bills, and we wouldn't be coming close if people's hearts and minds weren't in the right place.
Now, I've heard some accounts of certain legislators, and they would be on the Republican side, that have voted against their conscience. Are you aware of any of these situations, and why?
You know, I mean, it's politics. That's all I can say in terms of the why. Like, it's there are definitely people who are voting against their conscience. And definitely people who just would prefer not to vote on this stuff at all, because they want to focus on the issues that are actually important to Montanans. And it's politics. It's, you know, it's taking votes you don't want to take because you have other stuff that's really important to you that you need to get past. And you know, no, there's you can make judgments about that or not make judgments about it, but it's a political reality. And I don't know what the legislature would be like if everybody only ever voted with their conscience. I think that could have a lot of positive impacts, and it could also have a lot of negative impacts. I have no idea. I don't
That's
know what it would look like. It's a hard thing to imagine.
yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
More on 458. I read something this past week about a similar bill to 458. It sounds remarkably similar, and this is in Tennessee, and I think it has gotten passed, or it's going to be passed, and I heard that that state, because of passing that bill, which goes against federal rules on sex discrimination, they stand to lose up to $2 billion in federal funds, which I think would be a pretty big motivating factor towards not passing that bill. But it sounds like they might anyway, because they don't understand how much 2 billion is, or how dependent they really are on federal funds. I don't know if Montana is as dependent as Tennessee, but have you heard about that? And can you tell me a little bit more about what that mechanism is?
Yeah, I mean, I think most states, I would say all states are highly dependent on federal funds. I mean, most of our funding for Medicaid, for example, comes from the federal government. A lot of our education funding comes from the federal government. You know, there are any number of departments in the state government in Montana that depend on a lot of federal funding. Department of Agriculture, Department of Environmental Quality, you know, federal funds impact the ability of the state of Montana to take care of its residents from top to bottom. We would be in a very bad position in Montana if we were to lose federal funding in some of those areas. And I have seen some stuff about the Tennessee bill. The fiscal analysis, I think, on that bill is a realistic analysis. What is going on in Montana is that they have a fiscal analysis process for bills where Basically, if it doesn't have, if they cannot easily find a direct and immediate fiscal impact to legislation, they will say that the fiscal note is zero. And the fiscal note on this bill is very suspicious because it is zero. And one of the things we talked about with the committee, the Finance and Claims Committee, was that there, it seems virtually impossible that the fiscal impact of a bill that essentially conflicts with both the federal government and the U.S. Supreme Court in terms of what equates or what is sex discrimination. There's no way that that could not have a negative fiscal impact. So what we found was that the Department of Corrections and the Montana University System had both written notes to the Office of Budget and Policy Priorities saying, while we can't give you a number, here's all the reasons why we think this bill is going to cost us a bunch of money. And instead of including that in the fiscal note, the Office of Budget and Policy Priorities just sent a zero fiscal note to the committee and didn't include any of that information, despite the university system and the Department of Corrections saying, we basically can't measure the costs of this bill because they will be so high. So that was shady, I would say. So that is a bad action on the part of the budget office.
I would say it's and fraudulent then, even, right?
Yeah, it was really strange because they usually include those notes, right? Even if they don't have, anyway. So it was pretty suspicious. And then the other thing that has happened is that the Democrats in the Senate have requested that the Legislative Fiscal Division do a more in-depth analysis of all of the federal funds that would be impacted if this bill were to pass. And that analysis is not finished yet. So what I think, what I'm taking from the Tennessee fiscal analysis is that is probably more likely to be reflected, that similar analysis in this thing that the Legislative Fiscal Division is doing. So we're still waiting to hear from the Legislative Fiscal Division about what the impacts of federal funding might be if this bill passes, because it is in conflict with federal law on multiple levels. It puts us out of compliance with the law, federal law that protects against sexual assault in prisons, for example, and being out of compliance with that is a big deal and is a recipe for a lawsuit. So there's not only just like the basic federal funding loss because of conflict with federal laws, but there's also the cost of likely litigation, which at this point, because of the number of sections of code, bills like 458 impact could be astronomical. And as we know, the Attorney General has already requested, you know, an additional $2.5 million from the state budget this year to defend against the lawsuits that are already happening. So it's just going to be more expensive to the state with essentially no positive impact at all.
Yeah, that's I feel like we're in for a rude awakening as this progresses. Hopefully calmer minds will prevail and this will get stopped in its tracks. So we're just about out of time. I was hoping you could just tell us one more thing. For those listening who might feel moved to try to help make a difference with all these bills, especially 458, what would you recommend that they do that could be most effective right now?
So in the short term, contact your legislators. Make sure that they know that you're not in support of bills like SB 458, SB 99, HB 359, HB 361. Make sure they know that you're their constituent and you're not supportive of bills that attack the trans non-binary community. Or if you don't, that's not as important to you. Say that you're not, you know, tell them you're not in favor of violating people's privacy, which is what most of these bills do. In the medium term, you know, talk to your friends and coworkers and neighbors and, you know, educate them about the trans non-binary community or talk to them about how these bills are a threat to our right to privacy and medical autonomy here in Montana, and it's bad. And then the long term, watch and see who your elected officials are going to be in 2024. Make sure you know who voted which way on these bills and pay attention before the election cycle and make sure you're voting for candidates who are not consistently trying to violate the constitutional rights of you and your family, friends, and neighbors.
Thank you so much for joining us today, SK Rossi. We are out of time, and this has been Body Politic on KGVM FM 95.9 in Bozeman. I'm Siobhan O'Steele, and thank you once again for joining us, SK Rossi.
Thank you, Siobhan.
Bye.
Bye-bye.